Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start, I have a Discord community description. The link is in the description. Go join it. It's really interesting talking. There's lots of things that's going on in there that people don't see necessarily on social media and things like that. So if you want to get more involved in the community, go get involved. Also, if you are listening to this podcast and you don't subscribe to the podcast, I would love it if you subscribed. And if you like the podcast, please review. It keeps the podcast going. The platforms that host the podcast like it being reviewed and like people getting involved. So I'd absolutely love it if you did do that. So this week's guest, Valentino Khan. I first met Valentino, I believe in 2017. We were touring Australia at the same time and we had like a dinner together, Korean barbecue. It was actually really good. And ever since then, I've kind of really been really interested in what he does in his career as an artist, as a DJ, as a producer. And always loved what he's done. Even though we kind of like, we don't play the same genres, I've always really respected what he's done, and his socials are always on point, and he's always one of the loveliest guys when you speak to him. We recently both played Shambhala Festival in Canada and had like a 5-hour drive back to the airport together and just like had some really good conversations, and I wanted to get him on the podcast and further those conversations. I really like his views on the industry. I really like how he runs his business. I really like his outlook on his career as well. It's really refreshing to hear. So without further ado, Valentino Khan. Valentino Khan, what's cooking, man?
What's good?
How are you?
I'm good, man. Back from Europe for a little bit, and then just hanging at home trying to finish some music.
Last time I saw you, we just left Shambhala Festival, and we were in a fucking car journey for 5.5 hours trying to get to
the airport. I don't know if it was exactly five, but it felt like that for sure.
No, it was. It was that long.
It was five?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. We crossed the border together.
Yeah. It was a special moment.
I'm surprised you haven't acknowledged that I grew a little bit of a beard for this podcast.
Is that what you did it for?
Let's just say that's what I did it for. I had to I couldn't come on here, you know.
Clean shaven.
Totally. Yeah.
It'd be kind of rude if you did, let's be honest.
What's that?
It'd be kind of rude if you did. Just like
it kind of would. I thought it was kind of in the protocol. You sent me like a 10-page agreement to sign, and I thought that I saw that on page 7 or something like that. And
I should change it to page 1, shouldn't I, really, though? Because it would just...
You should. I think that's something that like should be very direct in your face up front before you jump on this podcast.
Part of the branding, you must be hairy.
If you only knew.
Exactly. Yeah. How's life in LA?
It's good, man. I'm just thankful to live here where, you know, summertime is actually summer. It's beautiful. It's sunny and warm outside. I love it.
You're like very few amount of people that are actually born and bred in LA.
Yeah.
There's not many of those.
No, there aren't. I think that like people that grow up here aren't necessarily falling into some of the pitfalls that some of the transplants fall into when they come over here.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to stereotype and lump everybody into one group, but I'm just saying, I feel like growing up out here, you get a different experience and you sort of process differently
100%.
What this city is all about.
Yeah, because from an outsider's point of view, I literally just had a podcast with somebody and he's Irish, spent a long time living in LA, but decided to get the fuck out of there and wasn't enjoying it towards the end of it.
Yeah.
But I feel like when it's your home, it's your home.
Yeah, I think definitely LA is definitely one of those cities that if you don't know where you're staying or living and you don't stay in necessarily the right area or the right area for your own needs and your own preferences, you could easily fall out of love with it, I think.
Yeah.
But I think if you know the lay of the land, you know where you want to be, and also you are aware of the company you keep, I would say too.
100%.
That makes a big difference in enjoying it out here. If for anybody that's potentially trying to move out here, that's watching this podcast.
Do you still socialize with people from school, from growing up?
Not much. You know, everybody just kind of goes their different ways. It's crazy how like you're so locked into like thinking like this is the only thing that matters when you're in school.
Yeah.
And then once you become an adult, like, I mean, a majority of what you learn and like just the world that you're so wrapped up in, like none of that really matters once you get to be like of a certain age, you know, like once you get to be like an adult and like none of it really is a factor in your life necessarily in terms of at least what you learn, you know, not necessarily the people that are around you. But yeah, none of it necessarily factors into your life. Like you're really on your own.
It's a strange concept, isn't it, that you spend so much of your life at the beginning of your life at school, and then when you come out.
I mean, I have my own thoughts on like the schooling system, really.
Go for it.
I also probably have an unorthodox viewpoint of it to a degree, because you know, I grew up into a music producer / DJ.
Yeah.
None of your schooling really applies to that. But I do think it probably teaches you some things in terms of like structure, time management, things of that nature. But I'll give a general point. I kind of wish it placed a little more emphasis on letting kids and even young adults, like, you know, or people growing into adulthood, people that are like 16, 17, 18, whatever. I wish it placed a little more of an emphasis on letting the individual kind of find themselves a little more.
Yeah.
Rather than like, here's math, here's history, here's science, here's, you know, putting people into these rigid boxes of like doing all that stuff. But I also think in certain ways, doing that stuff teaches you how to deal with shit in your life that you don't necessarily happen to love and just find a way how to get it done.
Do you find that though, like in your career now, there's, or in your life now, there's a lot of things that you don't want to do that you've got to get done?
Definitely not to the degree of like when I was in school, because I would say like if there's things that I don't want to do, in the grand scheme of things, I'm still like, it's fine. Like it's, I'm fine doing this. And like a lot of times it happens to be related to my business anyway. So yeah. It's just like, hey, this comes with the territory. This is like part of the deal you signed up for.
Yeah.
So, I can't complain about what I get to do for a living. You know, I definitely worked hard to get to this point, but at the same time, like, I really can't complain at all. Like, if there's things that I don't want to do that, you know, like I said, come with the territory.
Yeah. What are those things?
You might find it hard to believe at times, because I'm very like forward facing on social media, but sometimes doing social media stuff, I'm just like, I don't know. It depends if I'm in the mood to do it or not. You know what I mean? Like, I think we all have different things that we want to do at any point of the day. And it kind of depends on like, if I'm just like, sometimes I'm just like, man, I'd rather not do this. I'd rather just focus on just making music.
Yeah.
And I know it's a common complaint these days with artists, but I will counter that by saying, like, I think if people complain about that, either just don't do it.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to do it, embrace it and don't fucking complain about it. Because, like I said, I am not complaining one bit about it. I am extremely grateful for being in this position and doing what I get to do for a living. And, you know, I always say, like, you're never bigger than the game. And, like, the game right now says, hey, for most artists, you have to have a presence out here on social media. You have to put yourself out there a little more. And, you know, I realize that might not be for anybody, for everybody. But you have to adapt. Like, it's either you can sit there complaining about it or you can adapt to it. And I think that's probably one of the things why I've like still managed to have a career, that I always try to adapt no matter the situation.
Well, I think it's just also just goes with the territory, right? Is that, like you said, is like, I know we spoke about it in the car, but like TikTok, for example, like that wasn't around 5 years ago. So it's like, but you have to learn how to do it. You have to do all of those things. And I think as an artist, if you want to have a career or a forward-facing career where people need to come and buy tickets, it's like, well, what do we need to do to get people to buy tickets? And then it's a case of, okay, well, you need to be in the public eye. How do you become in the public eye? You either make music that's so ungodly amazing that people cannot not hear it.
Yeah.
Or you make great music and you're on social media all the time or on a regular basis, or you make absolutely terrible music, but because you're such a character, you're such a character on social media, people want to be involved with who you are and want to come and see you. Obviously that's an opinion based thing, but like,
right.
There's three options really, isn't there? And the first option of making ungodly amazing music, well, that has to be pure luck. Because
you think so?
I think so, to a certain extent, because it's a luck of every gatekeeper agreeing with that statement.
Mm.
I feel like there has to be a level of foundation of fan base to even get that off the ground.
Yeah, I do think though, sometimes the music is just so great that it's undeniable. No matter if you're a fan, you're a gatekeeper, you're another artist, you're whoever. Like, I was going to bring up, actually, I just saw him over the last weekend. Porter Robinson is a really good example of like, and I told him this actually, I was like, you're one of the few people ever, at least in our world, that I can remember that took off a long period of time from releasing music. Mm. But when he came back, and I believe it was, I hope I'm not saying the wrong release, but it was Worlds. It was like his whole new sound that he currently still has now. When he came back, his music was so undeniably great
Yeah.
that it took them to another level. So I think, like, if you are away, you're off social media and you just don't have a presence for so long, when you come back, you better make sure that shit is fire. Legit. You know what I mean? Like, you got to make sure it's and it's on another level. But he really did that, and I always admire that, on his end.
Yeah.
And someone like how Porter presents himself on social media, maybe how I present myself on social media, it's two completely different things. There's no right or wrong answer.
No.
But is Porter Robinson posting 30 IG stories a day? Like, no.
Yeah.
Do I sometimes post 30 IG stories a day? Maybe if I'm carried away, I'm just having fun and I'm messing around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, you do it. My big thing, and I try to stress it to anybody I ever talks to about this, is as long as it's organic to you and who you are, you know what I mean? I think that's the most important thing. You know what I mean? And that's why I struggled with TikTok for a while too. Of just like, it felt like this new thing that like all of us like have to do.
Yeah.
And like, I think for me, there definitely were times where I'm like personally, like the style of like comedy or comedicness, whatever you want to call it, that I incorporate into, how I put myself out there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different than what necessarily engages on TikTok or what I thought engaged on TikTok. So a lot of it, and I'm still doing this too, a lot of it was just like, I want to find how to be a bit more organic on these
platforms,
on TikTok. Like, yeah. I mean, I've always feel like I've been organic on Instagram because it's just like, posts, whatever. Like, TikTok is very like, it's just a different breed. You know what I mean? And if you do like, I don't know, if it really applies anymore, but it's like, if you do the right, like dance or trend or whatever the hell they're doing. It's only because they're old. But if you do the right thing, like they can, that post could take off. That being said, I came to the point of realizing that, like, even if I did something that took off, like, did it necessarily do anything for my career in that moment?
Yeah.
It might have been like, oh, great, I'm getting a lot of engagement. And the thought behind that also was just like, those kinds of things can become a gateway drug into people discovering your music, which I think there's some merit to that if you really are consistent with that. But at the same time, like, I think like you always want that hardcore fan base.
Yeah. Foundations.
Like someone like a Rez has or something like that, or it doesn't matter, like just doing their own thing that doesn't matter if like their style of music is cool or not at the moment, or trendier, I should say. Like they'll still sell tickets, they'll still have that ride or die fan base. And I think those are the kinds of people at the end of the day that you want to attract to yourself.
100%. And I think that takes time. I don't think that can happen overnight. And I think, let's say, for instance, on the TikTok thing or on the social media thing, there's like, let's say, for instance, Mochak, right? And what he's done in the last, since COVID, like 3 years, like how his fan base came from TikTok and came from Instagram, but then transferred into the club. But it still took him it still took him 3 years to get to where although he may have, like, he did blow up very quickly, but in the grand scheme of things, he was very consistent with that on a social media, not necessarily even releasing music wise, but he was just very consistent on posting the content that works. And it was so organic to him, where like, if you or I try to do exactly the same content, it's not going to convert. It's not going to do the same thing.
I think whether people subconsciously or consciously like sniff it out, like people can sense a lack of organicness. You know what I mean? I think sometimes, people have their social media strategies employs that like eventually they do work, but I think like the people that really take it far and go far with it are people that are like being true to who they are. Yeah. You know? I think it really goes a long way.
How is that?
I'm rambling. I'm giving a social media seminar right now.
No, but I guess I kind of want to, I was literally about to ask, how does that go into how you produce music as well? Because there's still that level of like, that it's very easy to kind of jump on bandwagons, right? And I was obviously I'm very aware of your music, but I was just going through your music and there's no bandwagon jumping.
Yeah, I just try to do what inspires me at the moment, for better or worse. Cause I think sometimes people have a tough time like placing you in a lane. What's funny is I've had two songs of mine kind of blow up and have a moment on TikTok. Never spent a dollar towards marketing them or anything. And like, I think I just happened, at least for a period of time, to make TikTok friendly music.
Yeah.
And I hope my music continues to be TikTok friendly because it's a very powerful tool. But it just got me thinking like I think a lot of record labels or A&Rs or whoever, like managers, were like, post this song this way on TikTok and try to start this trend. And I'm like, I mean, I could be wrong, but like, to me, it like a song blowing up rarely emanates from the artist's account, unless you're like maybe like Doja Cat or somebody that like
that's massive. That has a
crazy amount of reach.
Yeah.
Like it rarely emanates from the artist's account. Like the first song I had blow up on TikTok was like, it seemed like people from like Asia or Indonesia were like doing some weird trend with the camera and then would like stop it and like do it again. And then the second song I blow up, like a couple of influencers made up some random dance to it.
Yeah.
Or I assume they were influencers. I don't know. They were accounts with large followers, like following accounts. And they did some random dance to it and then it took off.
Yeah.
And then everybody started doing it. So I had no hand in either of those strategies. They just happened. And I think maybe the sound of those couple records being Pump and Better, which I did with Wookie, maybe lended themselves to being TikTok friendly with the way they were kind of structured and how simple they were, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I don't necessarily make music in mind, with that in mind anymore, really.
Did you at a point?
I don't think I ever did though. Yeah. I think I kind of recognized that like, this kind of works just organically with the style of music I was making, which was like, for a long period of time was very, very simple vocals and vocals laid over the drop and kind of chopped over the drop in certain ways.
Yeah.
99% of those, which I just recorded into the microphone myself, which I don't know if a lot of people know that, but I think it just inherently worked. But I think if you start to like make music with that in mind, you're really rolling the dice there. And also like just the nature of social media is that, like I was talking about adapting, like, you know, it's constantly changing. Like I remember like a few years ago, posting raw clips of your sets and drops and IDs and all that was really hot.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like it went away for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And like now we're really back to that, it feels like. So you kind of constantly have to keep your eye open of like, oh, like, I guess this isn't really what the people want or the algorithm wants, however you want to view it.
Yeah.
And now we're getting back to this. So I think, like I said, as long as you're able to adapt, you know, and you're trying to be aware of that, but not obsessed with it, you should be all right, you know. But like, all this being said, like I said, like, as forward facing as I may be on social media, it's just like, at the end of the day, like, I want to be a musician. Yeah. Above all that, and I want to make great music, so like the focus has to be on that at the end of the day above all these other things. These all these other things definitely elevate you and can help elevate you, But yeah, I would love, and it's an overarching thing. I would love if the overall focus, just in general in music, is less on all that stuff, less on aesthetic, and more so on the music. You know what I mean?
I guess in question to that though, when it's based on more on the music, when you release the music like commercially, do you then start monitoring it on how it succeeds, or are you purely based on, you know what, I actually just released this record and I love it, I don't care how well it does?
There's a balance for sure. There are songs that even I know, I'm like, this is not going to stream well on platforms. But some of those records I'll play out live, and the people that are actually coming to my shows, it gets more of a reaction from them than sometimes even the songs that like stream really well for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's got to be a balance of, you know, some records you put out are like for you or for the culture.
Yeah.
However you want to do it, you know what I mean? And then some you might put out and be like, oh, this has the potential to take off. And at the end of the day, like, we all are just taking our best guess. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's the ones that you never expected to take off. Those are the ones that end up taking off.
Yeah, it's the life of winging it, right?
In certain ways, yeah. I mean, especially when you're traveling constantly, like, you just find, like I said, like, just got to adapt and find ways to get it done. Cause at the end of the day, we're living a pretty fortunate life here.
Yeah, we definitely are. How often are you releasing?
I haven't released music in a while. But I mean, ideally, you know, would love to get back to releasing once a month. I've just been kind of exploring, evolving my sound personally, and not just getting stuck in doing the same thing over and over necessarily, or getting stuck in doing what I'm not passionate about. You know what I mean? And I think I'm definitely taking strides towards that. I mean, I've definitely been very inspired recently by techno, hard techno, even some of the faster house records, like the DJ Seinfeld and Confidence Man record is really cool to me right now. There's a lot of Anna Luneau actually just dropped a new one that's really cool. Yeah, it's like a faster house record. There's a lot of it feels like we're evolving or due for an evolution at the time in dance music right now. And I'm finding what that means for me personally. So I got a bunch of demos that are in the chamber.
What's your process for that though? Because I guess like you said, evolving a sound or just staying put and just keep on releasing on what you do. And I think evolving is the way to grow as an artist, and your fans can kind of grow with you and then you gain new fans. But how do you do that for you? What's the process of like actually doing that? Is it a case of finding music that you like and then not recreating it but taking influence from that? Like, how, what's the process? Because it can be a long process.
Yeah, I've always taken the approach that I'm influenced by everything and nothing. And that meaning just like, I think I'm more so influenced by like the collective like energy. And I know that sounds very vague and mysterious, but like the collective energy around just the scene and what's going on, where, yeah, I'm like, yeah, I kind of see like the couple of those trends I just mentioned that seem to be going on right now. But like, what does that mean for me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What does that mean for me being organic to who I am? You know what I mean? Like I never want to be like, oh, I made the second best version of this record. You know what I mean? So yeah, like, I think we all are part of this collective energy that like inspires each other. Like I've like hung out with like dubstep producers.
Yeah.
And like just talked about music for a little bit in the past. And I don't make dubstep records really, but like maybe like one. Like, yeah. But I don't, that's not really what I do. But like talking to them, just talking about the energy behind the music inspired me to, you know, get back in the studio and work on some new stuff. So yeah, I think that collective energy kind of inspires me. And I think kind of the more unified we can be across all genres in terms of interacting with each other, I think the better it is for just the music we're all going to make, because it's just gonna keep that like the energy going.
How do you do that? How do you do that in a community though? When in the dance music world, the community is like, it's interesting because in America, I feel like it's a little bit more open to like you'd have a fan that is a fan of multi genres and kind of go see multiple artists, whereas I feel like in Europe more so it's very much like I listen to this type of music and pretty much that's it when it goes to like electronic music kind of scenes. Yeah. How do you think you do that though as an artist, as like someone producing the records, of actually going in and out of different scenes and also bringing people together in that?
I mean, I can only speak personally, like when I first started, like, you know, a while ago, for fans and promoters especially, it was tough for people to place me because I was all over the place and I was just constantly showcasing my versatility. I'd be like, I started out first making Mumbatone. Like yeah. That was the first stuff I really released. And that was like always where I laid my roots. And then it was like, okay, well, he's the Mumbatone guy. And I was like, no, I can do more than that. And then it was like, okay, for a second, like this is like many years ago. And it's like, okay, like he's making trap music now. Is he a trap guy? I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, and then I'm like, I put out some hard, some house music or some other genre. And I guess I've at the end of the day, like I've really laid my bread and butter being house music.
Yeah.
But like, it's, I think taking that approach from the beginning personally helped me like have a fan base that is just like, we just like him because we just like the stuff he makes, you know what I mean? And I think it's tougher to take that approach nowadays. I think timing definitely was a little bit on my side that I got into it like right as it really was starting to really blow up in America, like dance music. Like this was like after Bloghouse and pre Spotify, you know, somewhere in between there was like a nice sweet spot for me to take this approach. I think that definitely helped me, but I can also see how it can kind of confuse people and people are like who are they? Like, what are they all about?
You know
what
I mean? Tough, like, isn't it? It's tough because there's like, we're in this world where we want to kind of keep fans, like we as artists, so I hate using that word. It sounds a bit cunty, but like just you're trying.
I mean, we are though. I mean, we're also expected to do things outside of music too, which like doesn't that add to the art? Like, you know, you're
true.
You're involved in or even making your own artwork, you know, I don't know what you do on your end, you know what I mean? But that's
it's really interesting because as artists you're expected to do multiple things, like you said, like you're expected to kind of push the boundaries. However, there's also that balance of like pushing the boundaries and also keeping your current fans happy.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's why I definitely have all that in mind for sure. When I'm, you know, evolving my sound too, where I'm like, it's the same approach I take to DJing. Like, I think I'm not going to say there's ever a wrong or right approach But in my mind, there is a wrong or a right approach to DJing. It's like you should never play. I don't think you should solely play records that you're just like, only you guys are going to like it. I'm going to play. This is what you like. Agreed. Because at that point, you like, why don't they just go home and, you know, put a playlist on?
Yeah.
I also think you shouldn't take an approach to DJing. And let's apply this, both of these scenarios to producing. You shouldn't take an approach to DJing or producing where you're like, I'm going to make or play these records.
Yeah.
But like only I know about them and you guys don't know about them. And like, this is what's cool. And like, this is like, this is what I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like it or not, we're entertainers in addition to being artists. My ideal scenario and the approach I like to take is like, I'm going to play. Yeah. I might play a couple things that you might be familiar with, but I'm really trying to play records that you might not know, but I think you're also going to like, because I like them too.
Yeah.
And I think when I always say, like, when they're having fun out there, I'm having fun too.
Totally.
And I think my favorite sets are just when there is this connectivity between the artist and the crowd, the fans out there, where everybody's having a great time.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's the goal, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's what got me into wanting to make music in the first place is like, you know, like I came up producing rap records. So like for me initially, it was like hearing a record from like Dr. Dre or like Timbaland or the Neptunes and like hearing it on the radio or something like that. And like, you know, not even having the ability to like read the tag on it and be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And it's that constant like curiosity that like a record could spark for you. Be like, what is that? Like, yeah. I gotta know what that is. Like that's the kind of boundary pushing sound that like got me into dance music from that, because like literally it was I walked by my brother's room, he's playing Justice one day, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? Okay, fine, give me that record to me. And then it became a gateway to like listening to all this other stuff. So like that's the kind of reaction that I love to personally experience, even now when like I'm either at someone's set or like somebody sends me something. I mean, somebody sent me something, I guess I see the title and I know it's who it's from, but it's that same reaction that elicits of just like, what is that? Like, I have to know. And like, it, I almost have to like analyze it, like process it. Like how,
do you still get that feeling? Do you still get that? Like, what the fuck is that record?
I would say it's a little more rare these days. Yeah, I'm just being open and honest. It's definitely a little more rare these days.
I'll be honest. But, like, I can't remember the last time I heard a record.
Yeah.
And was like, oh my fucking God, what is that?
And I think the problem is a bit rooted in, you know, wanting to put people in boxes of like, you're this is the current sound right now. It is this kind of house music. Like, this is what you should be making. And I totally understand, especially for new artists, of how it's kind of scarier to take risks, even for established artists that are like, okay, like this is, even if it's going great for them, to be like, okay, I'm going to take a risk and do something different. You know, it kind of breeds the mentality of like, I'm going to make this that fits into this box. And you're not necessarily going out and taking those chances and taking leaps of like, I'm going to try something that's like, the sound is absolutely crazy and boundary pushing, where you're like, whoa, I've never heard anything like that before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think this is not just with dance music. It's a lot of genres of music where, you know, you're kind of seeing this.
I think you're 100% right. Sorry to bother anybody. I also think it's just
you're good.
It's just a case of how music is consumed now as well, where it's very fast. It's like some even some of the pop records are like 2 minutes long, if you know what I mean. And you're just like, everything's just like there, smash, smash, smash. Same with like on social media, everything's super fast. And it feels like there's actually no like time to really gather your thoughts about a record before it's even over.
Well, I think like, I think a platform like Twitter or X or whatever we want to fucking call it these days, whatever it's called. That's kind of actually a helpful platform for like, especially for major artists of like, you know, when they release a long form release and they've clearly taken their time and put artistic thought behind it. Like, for example, like Kendrick's last album, like no matter, I think people have kind of polarizing opinions on what that album meant to them, but like, clearly you did something that was, he was very artistically motivated to do. And there was a actual conversation on Twitter out there about it. And I think without like that conversation that we have, obviously not in a toxic way, just like, you know, but the healthy conversation between fans, and even if it's all positivity, I'm obviously all for that. Like, I think having that healthy conversation is important, in terms of like giving that long form, that long listen, style of music, a home, you know what I mean? Cause I mean, that's what, it's funny. It's like, I was talking about that last Kendrick album. I remember I was in Thailand with a couple other DJs listening to two albums prior, a Kendrick album. And we were in Thailand. It was like late at night, and then it had just dropped like at midnight in America or whatever it was. And we just sat and just long listened, and we're just like talking about his track, and everyone were like mind blown by it. But I think it's good to have those, like, music at the end of the day, like music, like the greatest impact to me that it has is it brings people together.
Exactly.
Like a lot of your friends that you made growing up were like, oh, like, cool, you listen to rap too? Like, And like, I remember like burning mixtapes for each other, you know what I mean? Back in the day. Like, it's a unifier, across people from different backgrounds, people of different races, religions, whatever you have. It like, it was like, you know, look how many people went to the Taylor Swift concert, like, or eight nights of it, whatever it was at SoFi, like she just did. It's like, are all those people exactly the same? No, but they all have some sort of commonality.
Yeah.
They can strike up a conversation, then maybe after that connect as humans. I mean,
yeah. And I think it's also being able to, with going back to the Kendrick album, like I loved it, and I was never a huge fan of Kendrick from the get go. Like, it took me a while to kind of become a fan of Kendrick. But I feel like it was the same for me with the Swedish House Mafia on their last album. And I haven't thought about it until you literally just said that. But like, when the Swedish House Mafia album came out, I got in my car and was driving somewhere for an hour and literally spent an hour just listening to it. I didn't like flick through any song. I didn't like see if I didn't like just gaze over it or have it in the background. I like listened to it like fully. And that made me fall in love with the album straight away. Like, first listen, I was like, once I finished listening, I was like, I have to go and listen to that again. And I think it's also, I'm a sucker for it. I'm terrible at it. I'll be sent a record and I'll flick through it and I won't listen to it in its full entirety.
Yeah, you know how we especially DJs, we skim through it. Like, we're not gonna listen to the whole intro beat. Like, we're just going to get to the build up and the drop and see how it sounds, you know what I mean? At least we're gonna get to the part where like the song takes off, you
exactly
know I mean? And then start to judge it. Yes,
but we're all, again, that completely defeats the object of what we do, because realistically, like, we spend this, however long it takes you to write a record, and then expect everybody to listen to it from the start to the end, because we've made
that's
it
why people like are that. People are restructuring their records in terms of, like, you'll hear, you'll obviously have the original mix version, and then yeah. you'll have the DSP, Spotify,
yeah.
Apple Music version that just, like, just starts just from like 8-bar buildup sometimes, and yeah. like, you know, yeah. So people are, it's, you can argue whatever you want to argue, but for better or for worse, it is changing the way we release music and the yeah. way we structure our songs.
It's also changing how people, commenting on, not like titling their records, because I don't know if you've seen it, but I've noticed it, especially in the last 2 years, where Spotify got really like, or DSPs got really strict on, like, okay, the skip rate is a big thing, and no one wants to hear a kick drum for a minute mm-hmm. to as a DJ. So now what you're getting is, on promos, you're getting the DSP version, which is called the original, and then you're getting yeah. the extended version, which is
yeah.
the actual original. But I guess that's very niche to electronic music, right?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. It is true. I never really thought of that. I'm just so wrapped up in our own world, I guess. Yeah. It is. But that is a way that it definitely affects, though. It affects, you know, what we do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I get why people wouldn't want to listen to a kick drum for.
I get it as well.
2 minutes.
I don't. This is the thing, is I don't want to listen to that.
Because people don't realize too. It's a like playlist, because playlisting is such a big thing,
yeah.
and even people making their own playlist is such a big thing.
Yeah,
like let's say you're like, I'm just giving you a hypothetical scenario. You're pre-gaming before a pool party or something like that, right? And like, you and four friends split a hotel room, and you got a boom speaker in the room, and you're like, one of your friends is like, yo, I'm gonna put on this playlist. Every song is like kind of getting into it, and it's like keeping the flow going.
Yeah.
Then there's this one song that's just like, and you're waiting for it to yeah. like to happen, and it doesn't launch, doesn't take off, you know what yeah. I mean? So then that's the one that's probably getting like skipped.
100%.
That's why I think playlisting plays a part into why we have to structure these records that way now.
It also plays into what music people are writing, because there's very genre specific playlists.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, they're like, obviously they still exist, but there's definitely house records that, like, where the drum beat never really goes out, maybe gets filtered out a little bit, but the whole thing is a constant crescendo.
Yeah.
There's not much like linear, like a rigid structure to it, where it's like build up, drop, like breakdown, whatever, you know. It's more just like, it could be something that's just getting slowly like filtered in.
Yeah.
And then it reaches a point where it may be not really, there's no drop to it. It's really more of a climax of the record. Yeah. And then that's what it's been building up to the whole time. But yeah, that doesn't necessarily work from the modern day streaming perspective, or formula, however you want to call it. Yeah, because people just like, it's a bit of the sign of the times. It's like people like the sense of immediacy, sense of like now, like satisfaction now, like I can get this right now. You know what I mean?
And there's also like a small handful of artists that can create longer form records that stream well, because that's what their fan base want.
Oh yeah, like it's definitely like, as much as people get caught up in like whatever your monthly listeners are or on Spotify or your metrics and all that, like there's artists that don't really do numbers, or at least relatively speaking don't do numbers, but then they'll sell a fucking 5,000 cap venue out in like bam, like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like a one-to-one. And I think for every artist, and like you said, their fan base, it's different. Some artists are, you know, are more like hard ticket artists compared to like, and some artists are streaming artists. There's also artists that stream and do millions and millions, like hundreds of millions of streams, and can't sell a damn ticket to save their life.
That, you know what I mean? That weirds me out. It happens.
Obviously we've seen it before.
Yeah. But it weirds me out.
It weirds me out a little bit. Like, okay, the first thought, if you're like on the, I don't want to say conspiracy theory tip, but like, you'd be like, oh, are the plays all fake? Who knows? Who's to say? But I think if you generally listen to that kind of music, it's typically something where it's like, it's nothing mind blowing that it will spur you on to like, be like, I have to go see this person, this artist in person. Whereas like a lot of those crazy dubstep records, in terms of what you're told, like is great for streaming on all these platforms, it's a terrible formula.
Yeah.
And it might not necessarily do the numbers that certain other records might do, but those guys are selling tickets like crazy. You know what I mean? Like there's all these bass music festivals that are popping up right now. And it's because they're not getting like plays of people like that are like, oh, I want to like listen to this long form necessarily, or like, you know, they're not appealing to the modern day, what you're told is like the traditional listener. Their appeal is like, they're making something that's mind blowing and you have to experience in person, especially when you lump in all the production and all that.
I think the thing that weirds me out with when an artist is,
it's not equivalent to their sales.
That's
like
the thing. That's the thing. And I think it goes to show that like, cause you can earn a good living from streaming if you're one of those artists, right? If you're doing millions, hundreds of millions of streams on your, but the thing that I struggle to work out is that, are these actual fans listening? Or is this just great placement on playlists and no one's really giving a fuck about your music?
I mean, if it's like we're bordering on questioning the validity of these things. I'll assuming the validity is all on the up and up, I think, you know, it appeals to somebody. You know what I mean? It might not necessarily appeal to you or I, or you or me, but it appeals to somebody. And it, you know, if it's great placement on playlisting, like people might not be skipping over, or maybe people are just, these are just playlists that are just on in someone's living room while they're vacuuming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
might not even be fucking actually listening.
This is what I'm on about.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think there's only it. Like I said, as long as everything is legitimate.
Totally. Yeah.
There's only so much you can fake that kind of thing. Like it appeals to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to name any bands or anything because I don't want to.
Why not?
But like, it's like, you ever have a band where you're like, I see these people like performing in stadiums or let's even just say like arenas.
Yeah.
But I've never encountered a fan of this band in real life where they're like, yeah, like I'm like, you know what I mean? So it's like, who knows? You know what I mean? but it apparently appeals to somebody, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it goes the other way sometimes where you have a band or somebody that doesn't stream that well, like you were saying, but sells crazy tickets. But yeah. I don't often find it the other way around where like somebody has insane, like there's a lot of people that have very successful streams that still can't sell a ticket, which is, it just blows my mind. The correlation, yeah. That like, there's no like fan pickup from that.
I think at the end of the day, it's like, some artists are just not hard ticket artists either. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not what they do. But I think at the end of the day, it's like, if you're trying to sell tickets, you have to like, people often go to your shows knowing that you care. You know what I mean? And knowing that you've put time and effort and thought into it, I think. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think it's easy to just be like, oh, I have X amount of streams or whatever. I'm just gonna play whatever.
Yeah.
But I think if people come to your show and know that you care in some sort of way, and it, sometimes it's playing really boundary pushy records. Sometimes it's just finding a way to connect with them. You know what I mean? A lot of artists are just like, they just have constant sing-along moments in their sets. You know what I mean? Whether they're playing edits, they're playing their own songs, whatever. But I think it's finding a way to connect with people in the live sense.
Yeah. How
on finding your way to do that? Yeah.
How on for you going from making music to being the person who you are on social media to then doing a live show? Like, I've always really enjoyed watching you from afar, really. And like, I've always really liked how you've kind of just told the story of you in different forms. Like, although we play same festivals, we play different stages. So we like cross each other's paths occasionally, but I feel like there's something that you do on like a branding kind of sense, that it's very, there's a through line every time. And it, like, I know what Valentino Khan is to me. It might be different to somebody else, but for me, when I think of you, I'm like, very energetic music, very energetic on stage, fucking is obsessed with wrestling and makes amazing content on social media. And sometimes that's like longer form promo videos for your tours to very consistent show videos. Like that is for me you, right? But like, there's not really many artists that I could say that about them that I also follow. Lil Texas is another one that I've had on the podcast.
He's great.
Whereas like his branding is so on point, and it's so like, it's always, you know what you're gonna get. And there's something for you that I know what I'm always going to get with you. And how do you keep that going? Where did that come from?
I mean, I think where it comes from is I've always been a very, very creative person. I've never been camera shy too.
Yeah.
Since I was like a kid, I was like making home videos and I always had a sense of humor about myself. I don't think I could deal with the world if I didn't. I think I'll try to answer it from a couple different angles. I mean, one, when I'm, once the, I created a song, it's done, then I'm like, how can I build a world around it that's organic to me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, hopefully I've never done anything crazy cringy on social media, but I always want to make sure it's like, it's organic to me and who I am. So yeah, that does tie into, you know, the social media stuff with all of that. But I try to be like, how can I create a world around this? You know what I mean? Mm. And it's not a lot of this. Yeah. Like you sort of alluded to it. It is a bit of telling a story, and that's a lot of, it's a metaphor for life when we're telling stories with our art and in big ways and in small ways. So I just try to find what's interesting about the music and perhaps finding things in the outside world, in our current everyday life sometimes that could possibly connect with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then as far as like just my energy on there, up on stage and even the music I play, like I said, like it's all organic. You know what I mean? It's really, I don't think I could live with myself. Like this has to be fun at the end of the day for me too. Mm. And I don't think I could live with myself if I'm up there and I'm solely doing something just to be a people pleaser or just solely doing, like I said, just solely doing something just cause only I like it. And I, you know, I don't think it's going to connect with people. I love when there's, like I said, like this flow back and forth of energy between you and the audience. It's great. You know what I mean? But yeah, I couldn't solely just get up there and be like, hey, I think this works. I'm going to do this. Yeah. And yeah, that translates to my stage presence as well. Like I'm genuinely having a good time up there.
It always looks like it. Do you ever have to, do you ever have to put that on though? Cause I like, let's be honest, touring can be hard.
Yeah. Listen, not all shows are equal. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you're still having a really good time up there, no matter what. I'll say that. Sometimes are you a little more into it than others? Sure. But at the same time, you're, like I said, we're still entertainers at the end of the day.
Totally.
We're still getting paid to show up to a venue and put on a show for someone. And you have to enjoy it. Or if you really, for some reason, I'm not saying this applies to me, but for some reason, you just can't stand to be there. You have to act like you love to be there, I guess. But like at the same time, I was just thinking like, I just don't understand DJs that like, I'll just watch and they're just like, just not even moving when they're playing. Like, unless there's a couple of like, maybe, exceptions to the rule, like someone like a Gustavo scene, like I don't want to see him move. I want to see him just be like, stand there, just be like, you know what I mean? Like
just be a grumpy Frenchman.
Yeah. Or like a Lana Del Rey or something like that. Like people like that, I think like where it's a part of like it meshes with the music, like then I think it's cool. But like for the most part, like for the everyday DJ, I'm not seeing you really enjoy it up there, I'm like how?
Yeah.
Like something is like there's something like wire that's not connected up there, because I'm just like, just act like you enjoy it at least, because it's like I said, we're really fortunate to be able to like travel the world and play music for a living. Like if you ask people like what are some of their top aspirations, it's like, oh, I'd love to like travel to Italy or travel to wherever, you know what I mean? Like people romanticize traveling a lot. We get to do that constantly.
Yeah.
And play music, which is like literally a constant in everybody's everyday life. Like, you know, 99% of people don't go a single day in their lives without consciously or even subconsciously, like just on around them listening to music.
Yeah.
So. But we're pretty lucky.
When does it become a job for you? Because there's definitely, and I mean that in like a job, as yeah. in this is work. Because I'm not being disrespectful, but I truly don't believe that like you're like, this is 100%. I love this all the fucking time.
No, I mean, that's, I think everybody like you, especially, you know, what you see through what we see on the internet or even in person, it's like, there's always a person behind that that's dealing with things on a day-to-day basis. I mean, for me, it's like, it becomes a job when I'm, and this is just, it's just how I am. And I'm like very detail oriented. I'm very hands-on with like all aspects of what I do, you know, whether it's the, you know, I did, my high power show, in LA, the Palladium, and like never, I mean that I'm kind of actually arguing against this, cause this was actually really fun for me, but like I was, I've never been more involved creatively and with the stage setup, the visuals, the like all of it. You know what I mean? So like I'm very hands on with all that, but like even when it comes to like, I guess when it like it's like, it's really the business side of it. And but you have to treat it like a job. Like if you don't treat it like a job, you're not going to find much success. And I'm not saying that, you know, you have to clock in at this hour and then clock out of this hour and then do, you know, necessarily treat it like that. I mean, there could be a good approach, but you have to take it seriously and you have to, you can't afford to let a certain aspect, and there are many aspects that we have to deal with, a certain aspect become an oversight. You have to just keep your eyes on things at all times. And I think that's when it can feel like a job, like, you know, you're applying to emails, you're applying to texts, you're getting back on things with people.
Yeah.
But it's all necessary. And if you don't, like, you're kind of fucked in certain respects.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to go back to that clocking in thing, because I actually do fully agree with it, especially at the start of somebody's career, of like just being routined on making music, because that takes a fucking long time. It's a process to get good at.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not touring, like, and you're going all in on this, you should try to be making music every day.
Yeah.
And I also do understand, as an artist too, there are times where I'm feeling really creative. There's times where I'm just like, I don't feel creative at all. Yeah. And it's a feeling, and you'll be more tapped in with that and more connected with your own gut and your own mind the more you do it.
How do you deal with the non-creative times?
I don't know, go watch sports or something like that.
Are you good at like compartmentalizing it in your head, where you like, okay, I'm not feeling it today, it's okay if I go and take a day out?
Yeah. Yes or no. Like, I mean, like yesterday, it's funny you said it, yesterday I actually passed up on going to the Dodgers game, because I was like, I need to work. I've been traveling a little too much. I haven't had enough time to work. They were really good seats, actually. So I'm kind of like
fucked off.
Oh yeah. My friend hit me and I was like, I saw the seats and I was like, God damn it. But anyway, like, yeah, like that's really when, and I'm not saying it like, in terms of like, oh, it's like pulling teeth, or it's like a drudgery to do or some shit like that. But it's like, that's when it becomes a job, is when you have to make those decisions of like, you know, am I taking this seriously? Am I clocking in?
Yeah.
And like I said, yeah, maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be at a specific hour, but it's like, yeah, I need to devote this day to like working on music. And I made good progress with the song I'm working on. So at the end of the day, it was like, it was worth it. I'm still salty over not going to the game, but at the end of the day, like I said, that's when it is a job, and you have to treat it like a job, is when you have to make those decisions. I mean, you know, going to the Dodgers game can be substituted for going out with your friends or like, you know, doing things that are part of a normal social life. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's, you got to make those decisions, and rightfully so, because like I said, it is a job.
Yeah, totally. 100%. With the High Power show, was that your biggest show, biggest like headline show for your, like for yourself?
It would be tied, because it's the second time I've done the Palladium out in LA, I would say. The first time I did it, I brought out Shaq, who I'd never met before. I'd only just talked to him on Instagram and FaceTime. And then I brought out Snoop, which was absolutely insane. Diplo came out as well. So I had a bunch of special guests the first time.
How do you even organize that?
Well, I mean, first the thought of is going into it is like that at that time, especially that was like, this is my biggest show ever. Mm. Most hard tickets I've ever sold. Like it's a sold out show. Like I have to deliver. Like,
yeah.
Like I didn't make any money off that show. Cause I'm like, I have to deliver. And, then it's like, well, if this is your biggest moment, like you kind of just make every phone call you can make. And the Shaq thing was just really, it was great timing, honestly. And it was, he's just such a great guy. Just a rock solid human being. And he hit me from it. He had just started the DJ Diesel thing. And I'd seen videos of him DJing on the internet before. And I was like, oh, cool. Like Shaq's getting into DJing. Then I had seen, like, he had played my record that I did with Skrillex like a while ago. And I was like, oh, okay. Like he played that song. Like maybe he's aware, maybe he isn't. And then he had just started his DJ Diesel Instagram account. It wasn't even verified yet or anything. So then I was like, I think he DM'd me. It was something like, it was like, yo, what's up, bro? This is Shaq. I love your shit. And I had to like, I was like, I want to make sure I'm really with y'all. I was like, oh yeah, Shaq. So I saw like who was following him that I knew. And I was like, oh, there's a couple people that like actually were following him. So I'm like, it seems like it's legit. It's on like the count was only posting like Shaq stuff on it. So I hit him back. And then I was on the runway in South Korea, about to fly home. And we started talking. He was like, yo, I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm like, oh shit, that's crazy. Cause especially born and raised in LA. I'm like, grew up watching Shaq and Kobe like win championships and all that. And then, yeah, he hit me back. And then like we exchanged phone numbers. And like about 2 minutes later, I'm just sitting, there's like a flight, just a random Korean dude sitting next to me. I'm about to fly back to LA. And then I see like FaceTime from Shaquille O'Neal. I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, I guess I got to answer this. And then he was just like, he just couldn't have been a nicer person.
Amazing.
And we stayed in touch after that. And then we talked, and I think I sent him some new music, and he said like, yo, I'd love to rock a show with you one day. And I was like, well, actually they have this show coming up. And Shaq did not ask for a single penny.
Amazing.
On the show. He just showed up, never met him. And that's why I tell people about him, is he really does it. His approach to it is really what's ingratiating himself with so many people, and what's given him, how he's given himself such a great reputation in our scene with what he's been doing, is just his approach and him not asking for any handouts and wanting to put on people and elevate people that he thinks people that he thinks are doing something impactful in the scene.
Yeah.
So, so then he came onto the show, and then, Snoop, I got connected with, from DJ Green Lantern, shout out Green Lantern, connected us together and brought Snoop back, out for that show. And that was like,
that's crazy.
That was, and then, yeah, then I called good old Wes. And I was like, yo, can you also go back to back with me? So yeah, I played back to back with Shaq, and then played, it was all surprise guests who I didn't say anything to anybody. It was just like, I just did special guests on the flyer, I think. And then, brought them out, and That was like, I could play 1,000,000,000 other shows, and that one specifically will always have like a really special place in my heart, because it was like a big celebration.
Yeah, of course.
At home.
Yeah,
and yeah, that was the first time I did the Palladium. Then the second time, most recently, to the High Power show, and really like brought out OGZ. He was cool. But like really place a big focus on just the live show itself, like the production of it all, and like had a big Tesla coil with like simulating electricity shooting That's out cool. of it. It was great to be that hands-on with all that.
I think it's really important when you're doing a show that big as well. I think it's very easy as a DJ to just be like, you know what, I'm just going to turn up and play some records. But I think when you're doing a show of that many people, it's like, how do we make this a special show that people are going to remember?
Yeah, and I think just because of the way and the route which I, you know, had my ascent into where I'm at now, I never really had the opportunity to do that necessarily.
Yeah.
Or even the knowledge at times, like I'm still learning and consistently just like asking questions and wrapping my head around things and from creative perspective when it comes to production. But like, I was like, this is a really great opportunity to do something impactful. And I think the more I'm able to do that, and I'm always looking for, you know, the right shows to do that at, I think the more I'm able to do that, the more I think people hopefully will consider me as someone that really puts on a show and really like delivers when you like buy a ticket to see a show of mine of that scale.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing with like the High Power shows that I'm like going to be doing more of. It's when you're doing something of that scale, like we know he's going to put a lot of thought and time and effort and energy into not only giving us something impactful, but something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's hopefully like the more I get to do things like that, like people will like associate me with that, those kinds of shows.
I think it's really important. And I think it's also really special with like what you spoke about with like Gustafelstein and things like that. Like these big artists do something special. It takes a while to get to be able to do that. So when we all know it costs money, we all know.
Yeah. I was like mostly because of the financial aspect.
Yeah. It costs a fortune.
I'm not just like, hey, like let's fucking bring a giant Tesla coil in. Let's like put the light. Yeah. It doesn't, a lot of these rooms for, you know, for the people that don't know that are watching it, a lot of these hard ticket rooms you go into, they're mostly empty. You have to bring everything into it when you're selling hard tickets. If you go to a nightclub, like a lot of them have a lot of it built in, and the lights and the LED walls and all that stuff. And but it'll be your standard club show mostly. But when you're going to a hard ticket room, it's like you have to bring everything in, but you also have a blank canvas and you get to do whatever you want to do with it. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, but I think it's like it takes time to get there. But when you get to the point of being able to sell that many tickets, which is hard to sell hard tickets, people don't realize. But selling a club show out compared to selling 500 tickets for a club show or selling 500 tickets as a hard ticket show, two completely different things. Because a club show, people just go to the club randomly. Like people don't turn up to the Palladium just to go to the Palladium, right? Like they're going to the Palladium. It's a destination venue. They're going to see that person playing. It's way harder to sell that amount of tickets. But once you get to that level, it almost feels wrong to not put a proper show on, right? It feels kind of like you're faking out and just grabbing the money for the sake of it. Whereas like, come on, like let's actually do something really special here and make sure that this is, because this could also be somebody's first time seeing you. And if it's somebody's first time seeing you, it's like, let's make a real impact on these people so that they become super fans. And every time I do a show at the Palladium or when we go bigger, let's fucking go. If you know what I mean, everyone wants to go.
Yeah. You feel like you're, you'd be shortchanging the fans and yourself. It's like making it all the way to the Super Bowl and then just not going to practice that week, yeah. not showing up to the game. You know what I mean? Or like, it's like this is, you have to realize, especially like the first ones you do too. Like this is your moment. Like you've everything. It's actually funny. I'm saying like that was part of like the little trailer I dropped before the first Palladium show is I basically said, I literally, I think verbatim said, it all leads up to this.
Yeah.
Like it, which is what I felt at the time. And I really had that like do or die mentality about that show. Like this has to be a success and people have to walk away from it. You know,
happy,
not just happy, but like, remembering that show, because yeah. a lot of these people like go to like, you'll go to like hundreds of shows in a year, you know, and my goal, especially with the last show that I did, the High Power show, now that I like learned so much from that first show, like
yeah.
there were so many little things on that first Palladium show that I did years ago that like only I and my team maybe knew that didn't really go according to plan.
Yeah.
But then no one out there, I don't think, noticed the thing. Like the first thing I asked when I got off stage was, I saw my manager and I was like, did anybody like notice anything that messed up? He's like, no, it's fine. It was great. I was like, okay, cool. Cause like, so you know, you learn, you can plan as much as you want or think you're prepared as much as you want. Sometimes you learn the best when you just jump into the fucking water, man.
No, I agree.
I learned a lot and like, yeah. So with this last one, like getting to do it again and put an emphasis on the production of it more so than ever before, that was a big goal of mine, is for people to walk away from it. And at the end of the year, be like, that was at the top of like the live shows that I went to that I really remember. And the set is on YouTube, as by the way, if anybody wants to watch it. I got it filmed also from different angles and all that.
It's nice to have that though, isn't it? Because you can go back and be like, oh wow, that was a real period of your career where it's like you say, like it's now or never. And if this doesn't succeed, it's like, what's next? Because it's fucking hard to, it's not hard to come back from if it doesn't succeed, but it feels like it's a hard thing to come back to if it doesn't succeed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it just gives you like more confidence to like approach it again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? From that perspective, I think you just get a better sense of what you're capable of, and then it becomes this thing where you start to chase of like, how do we level it up the next time? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because that was my thing too. After the first show, I'm like, with the special guest I told you I brought, I was like, shit, like how am I gonna, in LA, how am I going to top like bringing out Snoop and Shaq in LA? I never really admitted it to myself, but in the back of my mind, I was like, well, you can't.
No.
It's kind of hard to, I mean, unless you brought up like Kendrick Lamar or something like that. Like, I don't know. Like, it's like, it's really difficult to do that. Like, so I'm like, just focus on putting together a really, really memorable, great show with great production and great music.
Yeah. Do you plan the sets in that sense?
That set was very, definitely more planned than like your typical show that I would be doing, because there's so many bells and whistles with the production. There's cues, there's lighting cues, there's visual cues, there's special effects cues, that we have flames and all that stuff. So I even like, I worked with a great team which helped me bring a lot of these visuals to life, but I even was taking existing content and time coding it to certain records that I have, you know what I mean? So I tried to like really like have a great flow to the whole show. And it is a little, definitely like, I mean, I don't know how everybody else does it, but like it, for my end, it's got to be dialed in when you're doing a show with production that's that intensive, because otherwise, if you're just trying to wing it, then like somebody's gonna miss this. Yeah. There's just so much room for error there. Yeah. And shout out to the whole team that worked on that show, because everybody really nailed it. Especially I had the game footage to watch back now too, from the YouTube video, and watching it back, I'm like, man, like, yeah, it was. And it, but that doesn't come without, you know, hours of, like I said, you got to show up to practice. Like we did hours of revis and you know, rehearsing certain things and going back and forth with certain things, tweaking things, especially visually. So yeah, I kept saying throughout the week, like I don't get nervous for playing any shows ever really, but I especially was very sure footed in that show, because I'm like, I did the work. Like, yeah. I put in the work before going into that show. And I was just like, you know, as long as some wire doesn't short circuit, like I'm good. Like I know I put in the work for the show, and I, you know, preparation leads to success.
Yeah, I agree. Are you planning to do more bigger shows like that?
100%. Yeah. Like I just like my whole mentality in the last, I don't know, year or so, was just like kind of taking a step back a little bit, and I'm being like, I really want to be contributing to the culture, and even applies to, you know, something from a live perspective. I mean, if you look at something like what like Eric Prydz does, and just like, I'm sure people have watched his show and taken inspiration visually from that. You know what I mean? And I just want to be doing something impactful that like steers us on what I believe is like the right path. You know what I mean? But I think it's easier said than done. I think you have to kind of ingrain in people that like, you're the kind of guy that puts on those shows. And I think that first Palladium show, and I did a show in the Bay Area too, that was very similar, a high power show. I think that's that, you know, I'm taking steps in the right direction in that regard. And in conjunction with that, I definitely want to put on artists that I feel like put them on as support to those shows that I feel like are really pushing boundaries, really doing something cool and impactful.
Yeah, I respect that a lot, man. I really respect that. It takes a lot of work.
It's always been a thing that I've wanted to do, but I'm really, especially now that I have the means to do it.
Yeah.
I was just getting there. Like that was the thing about like the first Palladium show, was like, I was just getting there. So where I could do that, then, you know, pandemic.
Yeah.
It just like, thankfully I was able to kind of took a little bit of, you know, pick up from where I left off when things reopened and all that. But like, yeah, like now that I have the means to do it, and, you know, knock on wood, like we're all good for no more interruptions. I'm just happy to be in that place. And yeah, I think like you alluded to earlier, it's like, yeah, you're in a great spot. Like you're in a great spot, like do something great with it. I definitely want to place a great emphasis on that now.
Amazing, man. Dude, I think that's a perfect way to end this. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, man. I've always loved your music and had a lot of respect for it. And you've always been a good dude. And it's just good chatting with you. We're not stuck in a car for like 5 hours.
Yeah, that was a rough one. It wasn't actually that bad. It was more so the fact.
No, we made it fun. You know what was? I was like, all right, I'm definitely going to sleep in this car ride, because I was dead tired.
Yeah.
And I was just like, we were just having such good conversations. We didn't end up sleeping at all. And
yeah, it's great.
Barely made our flights. And
did you make your flight?
I did, barely. Yeah. yeah, we barely made our flight. I'm trying to like have like clear recollection of that, but I was so out of it that I was like, I just don't remember having to get on a different flight. So I made my flight.
That's good.
Yeah. I just don't remember. Like, I think, oh yeah, I was good. Yeah.
That's
barely
good.
Though, I think.
Yeah. Mine got delayed by like 2 hours. So I remember that. Good. Yeah.
But you had a connect, right?
Yeah. And then that got delayed. It was a nightmare that day for me.
Oh, it took those are the worst, is when you just haven't slept and then.
Yeah.
Everything goes wrong with the travel. It's like,
it took me 12 and a half hours to get to LA.
12 and a half hours?
Yeah.
That's crazy. We weren't even that far. We're flying out of Seattle.
Yeah.
That's insane. Or Tacoma.
No, Tacoma. Tacoma.
Tacoma?
Tacoma, is it?
No.
No. Spokane. Wow. Spokane.
Spokane.
Spokane. Right, yeah. Spokane. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
We fly too much. Dude, how can people follow you? How can people get involved with what you do? Let the people know.
I am at Valentino Con everywhere on the internet. That's the easiest way. Hit me up everywhere. Like, follow the High Power HQ. Follow High Power. Yeah, just hit me up, man. I'm eternally just out here.
Sick.
Like I'm they don't call it social media for nothing. So hit me up.
Love it. I love that approach. Dude, thank you so much. Keep
thanks
in touch.
For having me, man.
And I will see you very soon.
Appreciate you, brother.
Peace, man. Big love.
Talk to you soon. Peace.
And that's a wrap. Big love to Valentino for coming on. Thanks to everybody for listening. Please keep safe. Please share the podcast. Please get involved on the community. The link is in the description. And I will see you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.